Mysterious power. You have them. Everybody does. Powers of mind and spirit. Powers that cannot be explained. What's real and what isn't. What works and what doesn't. Join Anne Streber in her investigations of everything from luck to health to miracles to mysteries of the mind. And now, here's Anne Streber with Mysterious Powers Radio.
Hello, this is Anne Streber. It's Mysterious Powers, and I'm delighted to be here today with Robert Moss. Robert used to be a thriller writer. He's got an Australian accent. I'm going to ask him about that, but he lives in New York now. And he was a very successful thriller writer, but he threw it all up to become a studier of dreams, a scholar of dreams. And he is a scholar of American Indian dreams, Iroquois dreams. And I've got to find out from him why he made this change, how he made this change, and how it's changed his life. It says that in his publicity sheet, it says he feels that we should take our dreams seriously and remember them and study them the way Iroquois people, and I imagine other American Indian people, do. And this idea is fascinating to me because most of the time I can't even remember what I dream. So, Robert, are you going to help me out and help all the other listeners out?
Well, Anne, it's good to be dreaming with you. From my point of view, we're dreaming right now, of course.
Oh, really?
I mean, we might be in our bodies or think we are on the other end of a phone line, but everything that enters our field of perception can be looked at like a dream symbol if we want to look at it that way.
Ah.
For native people like the Iroquois Indians of America, dreaming isn't about going to sleep, it's about waking up. So the whole understanding of what dreaming is radically different. I've been a dreamer all my life. You know, yes, I've written thrillers. Yes, I've done other things. I've also been a professor of ancient history. When I was a child, I went through three near-death experiences. We didn't have Raymond Moody to give us the phrase near-death experience in those days. Australian doctors just said, poor kid, he died and came back, didn't he? Well, the poor kid didn't just have fuzzy experiences of shapes in a light-filled tunnel saying time to go back. In one of these experiences, I seemed to live 90 or 95 years amongst the native people who value dreams and become a shaman and elder of that society, and then I came back into the body of a 9-year-old terrified kid in a Melbourne operating theater. So dreaming has been central to my life. Dreaming,
now, do you think that
that
was a memory of a former life?
Oh, I think it's more interesting than that. I mean, I think from a certain point of view, all these life experiences are going on now, right now. So if you or I are connected to a life lived, say, 200 years ago or 300 years into the future, from a certain point of view, when we step outside the rules of space and time, all of this is accessible right now, which means that mental communication with personalities in the past or the future is possible right now. And that leads to the story of how my life changed and how I became involved with the Iroquois Indian traditions, and I'd be happy to tell you about
it. Oh, I'd love to know.
Well, so in the mid-1980s, I moved to a farm in upstate New York.
That happened to us.
You recognize something in this story.
I was going to say, that happened to us. That's a familiar story, but go on, yes.
I bought the farm because of a white oak behind the house, an oak that had survived the lightning. And I thought, well, you know, if I'm going to buy this piece of land with this rundown farmhouse, there'll be a sign in addition to the fact that I love the oak. And a red-tailed hawk comes circling overhead, making a sound that I believe would be language if I could speak the language of the hawk, circling above me, and she drops a wing feather between my knees. So I pick up the feather of the hawk, and I think, there's my sign. And I start dreaming differently on that land. I start dreaming eventually of an ancient native woman who speaks a language I do not know. And she will not, it's not one of those New Age soap bubble dreams where you have to understand everything at once.
Yes.
She speaks a beautiful, musical, cadenced language, but I don't know what she's saying. She speaks over belts of beads with the shape of a she-wolf and two human figures on one of them. And I don't know what it means. It's beautiful. It's exciting. I don't know what it is. But it puts me on a trail of research. And eventually, I make my first friend amongst the Iroquois Indian people of the Northeast. And he shows me a wampum belt in the archives of the New York State Museum. And it has the she-wolf and the two human figures from my vision. And he says, these are the credentials of the mother of the wolf clan of the Mohawk Indian Nation. and it seems that you're dreaming with one of our people of power, a woman of power from the old days, and she would show you her credentials in order to get your attention. And I came to realize eventually, Anne, I mean, I didn't put this all together at once. It took years and years of research and processing and integration to begin to get a grasp of it. But I now believe, and I can put it this directly, I now believe that I was contacted by an ancient woman of power of the first peoples of the land where I was living, there in upstate New York, because from the Iroquois point of view, some of their great ones stay close to the earth to watch over those of us who are living on this earth and give us advice and try to help us keep things together. And also because a master shaman, which this woman certainly is, can reach across time and space to people in the future or the past for mutual benefit.
Oh, that's wonderful. What a wonderful story. Well, this is something along the lines of what happened to Whitley, because he met a goddess-like figure, too, and people who've read Communion will remember that.
This is not a goddess-like figure. This is a very human figure.
Oh, really?
A powerful shaman and a Rondiwano. She has a name. I call her Island Woman in my book, Dreamways of the Iroquois.
Yes,
Because Island Woman is a generic Mohawk name for the Hurons in early times, and she was adopted from the Huron people. She has a historical profile. She's the grandmother of a famous Mohawk woman called Molly Brandt. And she's not a goddess, but she is a woman of power and one of a kind of sisterhood who communicate, I believe, with each other across time and place and occasionally talk to mere men like me when they find men who can champion the earth and champion the old ways.
Fascinating. This is fascinating. And you went back and to your Celtic roots at one point, too, didn't you? Or...
Well, yes. I mean, I think eventually we're going to discover that we're talking about ways of seeing and living and perceiving and healing that are shared by all our ancestors. One of the things that happened to me after I started dreaming with Iroquois of the Northeast is some of my fierce Scottish and Irish ancestors started walking through my dreams saying, "Look here, laddie, we know a thing or two also. Dream with us, talk to us." So as I talk to you now, finishing my new book, The Dreamer's Book of the Dead, which won't be out until Halloween time, I have dictionaries of Celtic and Scottish Gaelic on my desk, because just as I had to learn the Mohawk Indian language in order to write my book Dreamways of the Iroquois, the current one, I'm now having to master the Gaelic of my blood ancestors to deal with the dreams and visions that they're sending to me. One of the things going on here, Anne, is this. The dead, the ancestors, are visiting us in our dreams. They're dreaming of us. They're calling to us. It's not just we are having dreams. We are being approached. We're being visited in our dreams, and the dreams might be sleep dreams, or they might be moments of awakening in ordinary life.
Well, now, you're saying in this book that we should use our dreams, use them as a tool. What kind of tool would they be, Robert?
Well, dreaming is about everything. It's not just about this or that. I mean, dreaming is a way of being in the world. It's a way of seeing behind the curtain or the veil of appearances into the real world. The Iroquois Indians, who I got to know well, say that the dream world is the real world. The world of physical assumptions and physical perceptions is the shadow world or the surface world. They also say that the most important thing to know about dreaming is this. Dreams show us what the soul wants. They show us the secret wishes of the soul. The subtitle of my book, Dreamways of the Iroquois, is Honoring the Secret Wishes of the Soul. And there's a whole practice of healing, dreaming, and living in this phrase. But bear with me for a moment. In our ordinary mind, the Iroquois teach, we don't have a clue who we are, what we want, or where we should be going. We don't remember our soul's purpose. We let other people tell us what matters. We're driven by the petty agendas of the ego. In dreams, the soul, the deeper self, talks to us and reminds us what it wants. If we're not connected to the purposes of the soul, our lives lack energy, lack vitality, lack clarity, and lack magic. So, lucking into dreams, linking up with our dreams, is a way of putting ourselves in touch with the soul, our life's sacred purpose, and bringing back the lost energy that we lose in life by not living from the deeper purpose.
This is wonderful. Tell me, do you ever give any workshops?
Oh, I give a huge number of workshops. I have a very lively website called mossdreams.com.
Call now, well, mossdreams?
Weekend or longer workshops all over North America on average 3 times a month. And they're all about soul, they're all about healing, They're all about adventure, and they are really high energy. We don't sit around analyzing dreams. The Iroquois understanding, like that of all of our ancestors, is dream work is much more interesting and important than analysis. We need to bring energy and magic through from a deeper world into the body, into our physical lives. And my workshops are all about that. They're all about practical magic.
So this is Moss, M-O-S-S, dreams.com, right?
Right.
That's your website. Well, we're definitely going to put this up on our show description for this weekend, because I would personally love to hear you give a workshop. I think it would be very inspiring.
We have so much fun. I mean, this is cosmic fun. This is about playing better games. It's about entertaining the spirits. This is something that native people say. They say we are, whether we know it or not, in a realm in which we are in the play of forces from a deeper reality, whatever we call them, whether we call them gods, daimons, angels, nature spirits, or whatever.
ETs.
Human beings,
yes,
in the play of deeper forces, and we need to entertain those deeper forces. And one of the ways we do it is to act out our dreams, to turn them to theater, story, art, song, performance. And we do all of that in my program.
Well, this is fascinating, Robert, and we're going to be, when we get back, I want to tell you a short little story about how Whitley and I one time found ourselves understanding Gaelic. And I wonder what, I want to hear you comment on that. This is Ann Streber with Mysterious Powers. We'll be right back. Robert, this is Ann Streber. We're back with Mysterious Powers.
Okay.
I wanted to tell you this story about one time Whitley and I, actually we had a CD of Celtic lullabies. And we put it on in the car and we were driving around and we both realized that we could understand it. And of course neither of us speaks a word of Gaelic. It was actually Gaelic. And then we had a guest over to our house in upstate New York, and he was on the porch, and we were inside talking and planning this project. And he came in and later and said, I couldn't understand what language you were speaking. You were speaking some language, and I don't know what it was. And he was quite a linguist, so he would have recognized if it had been any kind of modern language. And at that time, Whitley and I just spoke a little bit of bad French, and that's about where we are today. And it wasn't that, because he was actually a French teacher, and he would have recognized it.
Mm-hmm.
Got any comment on that?
Well, I guess you're in the place of knowing. I guess you're in a moment when all things were open to you, and all memories were open. I mean, Plato, remember Plato?
Oh, yes.
Philosophy? He said the soul knows everything. It remembers everything. If we can just connect with the body of knowledge that belonged to us before we came here. Actually, I have that Plato quote in front of me synchronistically. It's the epigraph for a chapter in the book I'm just finishing. The soul, since it is immortal and has been born many times and has seen all things both here and in the other world, has learned everything that is. The soul has learned everything that is. What Plato taught, and I dreamed of this as a kid, it's why I became a professor of ancient history. I was dreaming classical Greek as a kid. I've had this task all my life of having to learn bits and pieces of different languages, because it's one of the ways that the deeper world communicates with me, and it's also one of the ways the deeper world helps me satisfy my left brain skeptic that what is going on is real, because it can be checked out and verified. Plato taught that real knowledge is anamnesis, which means overcoming forgetfulness. It means remembering. It means remembering the knowledge that belonged to us on the level of soul and spirit before we came here. So on the level of soul and spirit, of course you would know Gaelic. On the level of soul and spirit, we may know everything, but as little humans walking around in 3D, even if we think we're smart, we don't know very much. The trick is to wake up, and these moments of awakening are fascinating. I part of it, from my point of view, is this, whether we're comfortable with the word spirits, maybe we're more comfortable with the word ancestors. From my point of view, there are two kinds of ancestors we're going to have to deal with in our lives. The first are the ancestors of the land where we're living. People have struggled and loved and fought and survived on the land where we live. And the second are our ancestors going back through the bloodlines, and not only through the bloodlines, but our ancestors within our spiritual families, which transcend the bloodlines. And whether we acknowledge them or not, their memories, their lives, their stories, their languages are in some sense with us.
Well, that's fascinating. And I guess what you're really talking about is getting in touch with the ghosts of our past, or the people who've passed on.
Well, ghost has a very specific meaning to me. I mean, a ghost is a spirit of the dead that is still around because it hasn't moved on for one reason or another and can manifest physical effects, can appear to visual sight, can make sounds in the night, can be heard conversing upstairs or whatever. We use the word ghost, of course, in a figurative or symbolic sense, as even the Christian phrase, the Holy Ghost. So ghost or geist.
Well, I think the Holy Ghost is a mistranslation.
The energy body of the dead.
Yeah, I think the Holy Ghost is a mistranslation of the early Greek. I mean, I think it was, you know, the King James Bible has a lot of awkward translations in it, and I think that's one of them.
Right.
It's rather confusing.
Very confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Very confusing implies that you've got a sort of dragging dead man with chains wandering around, which is not the sense at all. Anyway, that's what a ghost means to me. I think that probably the word spirit or ancestors is easier. They're around, but you know, we're in the presence of the dead, we're in the presence of the ancestors, we're in the presence of the holographic memories of everything that has lived or suffered on this planet, and of course we're in the presence of forces other than human. And we learn about these in various ways, but you know, Anne, the simplest, most natural and easiest way to learn about these things, and the safest, is through opening to our dreams. And I'm talking now about our sleep dreams. Sometimes I'm talking about our waking dreams, but I'm talking about our sleep dreams. Because if it comes to us in our sleep dreams, we're ready for it. It's timely, it's safe, it's okay.
So would it be a good idea to, when we wake up in the morning, try to think over our dreams and maybe write them down and see if we can find any, I guess, what we would call symbolism in them?
Well, that's the beginning. I teach many fun processes for doing a lot more than that, starting with a fun process for sharing dreams on an everyday basis with a friend or a complete stranger within safe guidelines, so you can learn to tell your story, by the way. You learn to tell your dream well, you're becoming a communicator and a storyteller, and this is powerful. Getting some non-intrusive, non-prying feedback from your partner and being guided towards action. We need to take action to honor our dreams. Far more important than interpreting our dreams is bringing their energy and their healing and their magic through. So I teach all sorts of ways of working with dreams. Another one is I teach people how to step back consciously inside the dream space, how to go on a conscious visionary experience, back into the space of a remembered dream, go on with the dream, overcome the fear, get more information, dialogue with your dead grandmother, talk to your spiritual guide, and learn to develop personal doorways into multidimensional reality. This is real shamanism. This is core shamanism. This is not fuddy-duddy, tedious Western analysis. This is the old, ancient way of dreaming.
Well, you know, you mentioned shamanism, and I recently read a book which I think is very true, modern shaman were interviewed, and they all said, down to a person, some of them were men, some of them were women, but they all agreed that you cannot be a shaman without having a near-death experience, and you had two of them.
Well, I had three near-death experiences as a child, in the sense that I lost vital signs in hospitals and came back. I would probably delete the modern phrase from that statement, near-death experience. Certainly, no authentic shaman or shamanic type can do what he or she does without having an intimate relationship with death. Death mm-hmm. is the ally. You must have traveled beyond the gates of death. It's not necessarily required to have the extremity of a near-death experience in the sense of losing vital signs. I don't recommend that, actually. I mean, who on earth would recommend that as a way of learning? I mean, if you can learn to go beyond the gates of death in a visionary way through learning the arts of dream travel and shamanic journeying and do it safely, that's the better way to go. And that's what I teach people to do. I teach people, for example, to travel beyond the gates of death, to develop a personal geography of the afterlife, to communicate with their departed loved ones for themselves without an intermediary, without a psychic go-between, and bring back timely and helpful information, and to do it safely under guidance and protection. That we can do without losing vital signs in a hospital. That we can do by learning the ancient arts of dream travel.
Well, you know, myself, I am in a very interesting state right now because I recently almost died, and I was lucky that I didn't, but I was in a hospital for a long time, and I was kind of out of things, not actually in a coma, but not really with it at all for about a month. And during that period, I had what I call a near-death experience, although I think it wasn't technically that, but it was when my beloved cat Co, who's passed on, came to me and took me to what looked like the world of the dead. And I think to me that was a very precious experience, quite a wondrous experience. And I later decided that instead of really being my cat, it might have been my mother, who's killed herself when I was a young girl, and I don't know what she looked like, so she might have come in the guise of a cat so that I would recognize her, whereas I don't have any pictures of her, and I wouldn't know who she was otherwise. What do you think about all that?
Well, my intuitive flash on what you've said is I would look at your cat as the guide and as a possible guide for your mother rather than as a mask for your mother. If it were my experience, I know how important animals are as guides to the other world. I remember vividly, and the story is in my book Dreamways of the Iroquois, I remember vividly how much my black dog Kipling became a guide to me and the family after he was killed on the road back in 1986 near Halloween. I had noticed how often people who have difficulty overcoming the unfinished business with their departed loved ones, how often they can relate to a departed pet, to an animal who's on the other side who can become their guide and friend and psychopomp, the guide of the soul. And there's a reason why in many mythologies, an animal, often a dog or a black dog, is the guide of the soul. And the cat, of course, has great spiritual significance in many traditions.
That's right.
In the tradition of my Scottish ancestors and in the traditions of Egypt, for example. So I would, if it were my experience, I would look at Ko as the guide, the cat as the guide, probably wiser than the humans when it comes to dealing with these things, and I would consider what else Ko can show me and perhaps how Ko can help other people as well.
Maybe I should try to get in touch with them again.
Absolutely. Why not? I mean, here again is one of the core techniques that I teach and practice. I call it dream reentry when you're working with a dream. You go back into the space of the dream and you go on with it. You do something more. You use the space of the remembered dream or vision as a portal, as a doorway for a visionary journey to do something more interesting or to have more fun. And if I have dreamed or visioned Ko, I can go back into the space where I was with Ko and I can do something more, and that could be fascinating.
That I'd love to. I love that cat so much. Just an old dumb Siamese cat, but he was a very wise cat, and I'm going to try to contact him again. I want to ask you about nightmares. What are nightmares? But first, we need to take a little break. This is Ann Striebert's Mysterious Powers. We'll be right back. This is Ann Strieber from Mysterious Powers. I'm talking today with Robert Moss about dreaming, and his book is called Dreamways of the Iroquois. And I want to tell you, this is a truly exquisite book filled with wisdom. Robert, what about nightmares? Do they have anything special to tell us?
Well, yes. And in my personal vocabulary, a nightmare is an unfinished dream. Yes, it's scary. But the singular quality of a nightmare for me is it's so scary that we want to get out of it. We want to run away from that, slam the door and say, thank whatever it was only a dream. In other words, we ran away, we got out of whatever it was that was challenging us. This is a very poor strategy. We do it because we're fearful, but you know, there are great gifts waiting for us when we brave up and go back into the space of the nightmare and confront the terror on its own ground.
Well, now, only a dream is something you would never say. That's the kind of thing our mothers always said to us when we woke up screaming and they had to come in the room, but only a dream is not something you would say.
Well, I doubt that helped you as a child. It's never helped any child I've ever heard.
Yes.
As a matter of fact, children become extremely distrustful of adults when they hear that because children know that something real is happening.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of children's scary night experiences, by the way, they're not necessarily dreams in the sense that we are discussing sleep dreams at the moment. They may be psychic energies connected with a dysfunctional family for whatever. For example, psychic energies that are roiling and unstable in the environment. So with children, we have to look really at whether it's a dream or whether it's the psychic effluvium of all the bad stuff going on in family. I mean, a night terror in the case of the child might be the effect of roiling, confused psychic energies in the household. It might be a psychic intrusion rather than a dream. A nightmare, in my mind, is a dream. It's a scary dream, but it's an unfinished dream. We run away from it. And whether it's a child or an adult who's running away from a dream and leaving it as a nightmare, we need to learn the technique of facing the challenge on its own ground. Let me give you an example. Suppose we dream of an intruder. We need to know Is this someone who could break into the house, in which case do we need to attend to our household security? Is it an intrusion in the sense of a disease that could break into the body, in which case is it early warning that could help us to stay well? Or is it an intrusion of something larger and more interesting? Is it an intrusion of the larger self, of the higher self, perhaps, in the face of which the ordinary self is usually panic-stricken because the ordinary everyday mind is terrified of something wiser and deeper than its ordinary self? In dreams of initiation, dreams of summoning to a deeper life, we're often terrified and run away because the angel, the tiger, or whatever form the spiritual messenger takes is so much bigger than us. So a very good technique to learn in relation to nightmares is to turn around, stop running away, face the challenge, dialogue with it, confront it if necessary, and claim its power.
Well, you know, I knew a fellow once. He actually wrote a book about this experience. And he had thyroid cancer, and he kept having dreams of having his head cut off. And he really put off having this taken care of until it was almost a little bit too late, because thyroid cancer usually does not spread, and it's pretty easily curable. It's one of those cancers which, you know, they irradiate the thyroid and basically kill it, and then you take thyroid pills for the rest of your life. I mean, if you're going to get cancer, it's not a bad one to get. But he kept having these dreams of decapitation, which disturbed him greatly. And in a way, I think they caused him not to act to get healthy again. They almost, he almost put off getting treatment until it was too late. So maybe did he misinterpret this, or what
do
you think?
Let me put it to you this way. Dreams are not on our case, they're on our side. If I dream something that is scary or threatening to me, that's information I need to recognize and work with, not reject. Dreams are not on our case, they're on our side. One of the things going on in dreams, on the health level of the most basic kind, is that our bodies show us in dreams what they need to, what we need in order to stay well. The body.
So he needed his head cut off. Yeah, go ahead.
I won't talk about his case. I don't know him.
Yeah.
But in general, if I dream a scary motif that might relate to my physical health, the dreams are probably becoming more dramatic because I'm not getting the message. We don't need to have nightmares if we pay attention to gentler and more timely advisories. It's because we're in the habit of slamming the door on our dreams and not paying attention that the dream source, the dream friend, the dream ally, has to get more strident with it.
That's it. And that was what was happening to him, obviously. I know you don't want to comment on his case because you don't know it, but the dreams were trying to break through and saying to him, do something, do something.
I know a man, I'll give a case that I do know, I mean, and there are thousands of them. I know a man who dreamed that the bear was constantly trying to come through his doorway. He was constantly trying to stop the bear coming in. Initially it was a bear cub, then it becomes a great big mama bear. He's trying to stop the bear. And finally, in waking life, on a road in the Berkshire Mountains of Massachusetts, he has to stop his car because a black bear is in the road in front of him in waking life. At this point, when the symbol or the creature or the animal guardian comes through on the roads of ordinary life, he says to himself, what does the bear mean to me? And at that point, he opens to the fact that the bear is a great North American symbol of healing. The bear is a great medicine animal of North America. He recognizes as a health advisory, and he starts to work with it. So he was fortunate. He got the message again in waking life, and at that point, because we're so materially oriented, this is the only way we operate sometimes, at that point he decided to pay attention and do something.
That's interesting. So it would help to know what these symbols traditionally mean. I mean, I think that dreams are over-interpreted sometimes, and they get a little silly. I mean, I don't know if anybody who doesn't know you well can really interpret your dreams.
Oh, I think the opposite. I think an absolute stranger can often do better than someone who knows you if they operate within the right guidelines. You'll see in my book a lightning dreamwork process for giving non-intrusive, non-authoritarian feedback and associations with dreams. But I want to say again, Anne, this is not Western dream interpretation or Western dream analysis that I am offering. This is something much more powerful. We don't sit around talking about symbols all the time. I'm a symbolist about everything, but I'll say this about dreams. There are basically three broad bands of dreaming. The first are the literal dreams that relate to physical reality, including dreams of the future, dreams of things that haven't happened yet, things mm-hmm. we might want to avoid by taking appropriate action, dreams that can keep us alive. I couldn't be talking to you right now if I hadn't avoided death on the road in probable car accidents at least twice by acting on dream information and avoiding the accident. So there are the literal dreams that keep body and soul together.
Can you tell us some details about that?
Well, what would you like me to say?
Well, what did you dream, and then what did you see when you were driving?
Well, when I was a war correspondent in Vietnam, I dreamed that I should not go out on the road on a certain morning with a photographer who was going to be in the car with me, because there was death on the road in the form of a heavy shell, an artillery shell or mortar shell.
So it was a very specific dream.
My friend, I'm not going. I've had this dream. And he thought I was wimping out, and he went out on the road, and he was blown up and killed, and I was not. That's pretty clear cut.
My goodness.
There are stories about this in my books. In Conscious Dreaming, which is my foundational book about dreams, and in Dreaming True, which is about dreaming the future, and in the new one, Dreamers of Iroquois, which show that dreams are not just predictions of the future when they involve the future, but give us early warnings and early opportunity signs. And if we can only learn to gather the information, clarify it, and operate with it in terms of developing an action plan, we can do much, much better. We can reshape the future for the better.
Well, you know, my son is somewhat psychic, although he wouldn't, I don't know if he'd even call it that. But for about a year before I had my aneurysm that burst, he was very, very troubled and haunted by fear of death. And he even went to a psychologist about this because it bothered him so much. And he later said that he was particularly afraid of brain death and brain injury. Now, this is a young boy of 26. I mean, I never had thoughts like that when I was that age, and I think what he was doing was psychically picking up what was going to happen to me.
Well, we live in overlapping mind fields and overlapping energy fields. I mean, it's entirely natural for us to pick up things like this, particularly about people we love and are connected with us. The only strange thing is that so many people in our culture are so wedded to the left brain that they don't use the body's instincts as well as the intuitive senses that come alive in dreams. He may have understood you on a body level. He may have understood you because in his energy field, which would be quite natural, he's picking up things that are going on in the template, the energy field of your body. This is the most natural thing in the world. The only thing unnatural is that in our society, so many of us are not in touch with it.
Well, it's true, because the aneurysm was there. Well, they think it was there my whole life. It's just it was never spotted because I never had an MRI scan of my brain, which is, you know, you have an MRI scan of your back when you pull your back out or something, but you rarely have one.
I'm terribly sorry this happened to you, Anne. But let me say this as directly as I can. We have all sorts of ways of knowing about these things, of knowing what's going on in our bodies ahead of time on all sorts of levels. We make a profession out of screening out these signals. I do that myself. I have to work around the clock to get my books done, and I will ignore and I will overrule feelings and pains and symptoms in my body, and I will put on one side dreams of caution because I want to get the job done. I do this myself.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that our bodies know what is going on inside them, and other people who are connected to us will know energetically what's going on with us if they pay attention, and we can get advisories in this way.
You know, I just wonder, I don't mean to talk about myself, but I just wonder if I had been more intuitive and thought more along the lines of the philosophy or the teachings that you're bringing forth in this book, and if I would have been more alert to the warnings that my son's angst were bringing. I guess that's my question. I just wonder if I would have noticed, if I had attended some of your workshops or read your book earlier, if I would have noticed this.
Well,
and realized it was a warning. Yeah, go ahead.
It's impossible for me to answer that question, but I'll go back to something I said earlier with a different example. I mean, we are given early alerts to just about everything, in one way or another, if we'll pay attention. I'm thinking of a dear friend of mine who eventually developed breast cancer, and her dreams had been preparing her for it, and she had bad feelings about it, but she didn't, you know, quite know and hadn't gone to the doctors, and in fact, in her routine checkups, nothing had been found, until her dead father appeared in a dream in a white doctor's coat and screamed at her, "Go to a doctor now, you have breast cancer."
Oh, fascinating.
And it was a dead father's intervention that drove her to a doctor, and going to the doctor at that point probably saved her life. There are other things that helped to save her life, but probably it was the intervention of her dead father in a dream she absolutely could not ignore, you know, that made the difference. So, you know, the question, as usual, is what are we willing to hear? And how many times do we need to be told in how many ways before we hear it? Our dreams give us gentle advisories on everything we need to know to keep body and soul together, connect with our deeper purpose, and get through the thickets and obstacles of life. We're missing out on more than you and I have discussed if we're not paying attention.
Fascinating. I keep saying the word fascinating, but this book is fascinating. And I do think that in our society, we're missing a huge part of our experience of reality because we do not pay any attention to dreams, or if we do, we just interpret them in some facile way with
a
dream book.
Well, that's the story until recently, but it's changing, and I'm part of what's changing it. I founded my own dream school. I'm teaching the process I call active dreaming, which marries modern techniques of dream work to shamanic methods for shifting consciousness and healing and traveling between the worlds. I've already graduated 100 teachers of active dreaming from my own dream school. And in our small ways, but significant ways, we're beginning to change things. So you've given us a description of how lost to the deeper life and the dreaming our society has been. Some of us are working very actively to change that.
Well, Robert, I want to find out after we come back from our break, what type of lessons you teach people in your school? Because I would like to know how to be more alert to dreams and symbolism in my own life. I know you can't, I'm not asking you to boil down, you know, weeks of teaching in just a few sentences, but I would love to hear a little bit about this. And this is Ann Strieber from Mysterious Powers. We'll be right back. Hi, Robert. This is Ann Strieber from Mysterious Powers, and we're back. And before we took a break, I asked you about a little bit of information about what you're teaching people in your workshops. You said that you have a school where you are teaching people who are going out and helping people interpret their dreams in a real way. And I'm fascinated about this. Can you tell me more about it?
Let's move beyond the word interpretation. I know it's awfully hard. We're stuck with these Western modes of brain-centered analysis. We do something so much more exciting than sitting around interpreting dreams. We practice the art of dream travel, which means we learn to travel in consciousness into the dream space and operate within it. For example, you dreamed something either in the night or the waking vision or indeed as a memory from your own life. We teach you how to go back into the space of that dream or vision and do something wonderfully helpful and healing, and we teach you how to travel into the dream space with other people to support you and assist you. In this way, you can recover your own vital energy, you can get clear advisories for the future, and you can discover your soul's purpose. Not only do we work with sleep dreams and waking visions and shamanic journeys into other worlds, we work with the synchronicities and coincidences of everyday life. I spend a lot of time in my own practice and in my dream school teaching people to navigate by synchronicity, to look at everything that enters the field of perception in waking life as if it might have symbolic resonance, as if it might be a direct message from the divine to your soul. You know, when we go dreaming, when we travel into the dream space, we step through the curtain of the physical world. We come out somewhere deeper and often wiser and more thrilling. Through synchronicity, through coincidences, through chance encounters, through the play of the unexpected, forces from the deeper world come pushing or poking or tickling through the curtain of our ordinary consensual hallucinations and can bring us awake. So we work with dreams and we work with synchronicity. They're two halves of the same thing.
Well, is synchronicity, the more Western term for that is coincidence, although coincidence does not cover it. But there's some saying, I think I have this right, that coincidence is God telling you he's here or something like that. Do you remember that?
Well, God or the gods, it depends on your point of view. Certainly, certainly when synchronicity comes richly into play, you suspect the presence of larger powers, of deeper forces, of things beyond the ordinary. And of course, that can be a blessing or it can be a caution. It depends whether the pattern of coincidence is negative or positive. The coincidences might come to redirect you from a path that is mistaken. But it's a wonderful way to operate as a dreamer in waking life, to follow the flow, follow the messages of coincidences, and play the game of treating whatever comes into your field of perception as if it's a dream symbol with maybe a direct message from God to your soul.
Like, for instance, what if, I remember one time Whitley and I were driving along the road. This was out in the country in New York State, and there was a huge snake stretched across the road. And we were, thank goodness there wasn't a lot of traffic or anything, so we were able to stop and pick it up and get a stick and nudge it off into the side. It was not a poisonous snake. I don't think there are any poisonous snakes up there like in Texas where you would really watch out if you came across a big snake. But How would you have interpreted that? We didn't interpret it anyway. We just interpreted it as, thank God we didn't run over that beautiful snake. But how would you interpret something like that?
Well, as a show, once again, you see, you're using the word interpretation. It's okay. It's hard to get away from the Western language. If it were my experience as a shamanic type who works for the animal guardians in the realms of the animals spiritually, I would say to you, you now have a good balance in the favors account with the snake people. I mean, you did something for the serpent, and whatever the snake people represent, they're going to be likely to help you in the future. In many traditions, the snake, the serpent, represents a connection with the deep earth, with the underworld, and with powers of healing. Look at the symbol of our medical profession.
That's right.
The serpent staff with the snake wrapped around the staff. That is the symbol of Asclepius, the Greek god of dream healing. If you went to his temples, you hoped that one of his mascot snakes would come and slither around you and help you to be healed. So I would say that by doing that favor for the snake, you probably put yourself in a realm in which the snake, in your dreams, as a psychic energy, is going to be a healing ally for you.
Fascinating. That is incredible. And of course, at the time, we were just oblivious to that type of thinking. But that's a wonderful type of thinking. I remember another time we were driving around in the streets of the roads in upstate New York, and Whitley ran over a turtle, and he could hear the shell crack, and it just broke his heart. He was so upset about this, and he went out, and you know, he had hit the turtle, and it was just heartbreaking. And give me your thoughts on that.
Well, as you look at the cover of Dreamways of the Iroquois, my new book, you'll see there's a turtle rattle on the cover. That turtle rattle is actually the shell of a snapping turtle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The snapping turtle can grow to be much bigger than that particular rattle on the cover. The snapping turtle is the teacher of the deep for the native peoples of the Northeast. It's also on the turtle's back that we live. We live on Turtle Island. First woman who came from an earth in the sky where people operate by thought dances this world into creation on the back of a turtle. So if I've run over a turtle without noticing, I'm probably going to want to do something to make amends to all that the turtle represents, particularly by getting in touch with the depth of life, because the turtle, for the Native Americans, is about the earth energy, the earth wisdom, and operating from that earth energy, and about being in touch with the deeper thinking.
So in many ways, that both those animal events were really telling us the same general thing if we had realized it, that we needed to get in touch with ancient wisdom.
Well, that would be one way of putting it. I think there are specific messages in addition to that.
Huh. And I remember one time that my son was out using a weed eater in the yard, you know, and one of those little things where you have a little cord that circles around really very quickly and cuts weeds, and I'm sure you've got one of those.
And not anymore, not since I sold the farm.
Well, are you living back in the city now?
I'm living in a small city, and I'm perfectly happy living in a small city. I have a creative cave in the basement where I work when I can work at all hours without being disturbed, and I'm perfectly happy not having 130 acres to watch over anymore.
Well, I'm not going to ask you what city, because you don't want to tell us that, but
you're telling us a weed eater story.
Yes, yes. But he by mistake, he hit a frog, and he took the legs off the frog, and he was totally heartbroken. I mean, he was just heartbroken. And do frogs symbol? Was this there something for him to learn from this?
Well, I mean, if I have any of these interactions, whatever specifically is going on, I'm going to meditate and learn about the animal with whom I've had an interaction. I mean, native people, not only the Iroquois, but all indigenous and ancient peoples I know anything about, say that if humans are not in touch with their animal spirit, their animal side, they're not fully alive. That our connections with the animals will show us a natural path of our energy, and I must say that connecting people with the animal powers is the quickest way I know to raise vitality, intuition, and instinct in an average life. So if I've had an interaction with a frog, maybe an unhappy, unpleasant one like this, I am going to learn. I'm going to study what the frog means in different traditions and has different meanings in different contexts. I'm going to accept that for whatever reason, I now have to learn about the frog and the teachings of the frog. The frog, of course, is a great bug eater, so if you can make friends with the frog after having dismembered it, maybe the frog could be an ally in dealing with bugs in the sense that we use the word bugs, dealing with the bugs that bring illness. you know. But you're going to have to search these things out for yourself, and you're going to have to learn to make a direct connection with the animals, not just sit around looking them up in books. You're going to have to study their paths in nature. You're going to want to learn to communicate with them in a visionary way. My big vision of Island Woman, the ancient Iroquois woman of power, whose voice is in my book, along with my own Anne, talking across three centuries of TikTok time, calling us back to soul. My initial encounter with her was on a night when I flew on the wings of a red-tailed hawk north of Canada. It was a very physical feeling vision. So the gift of the connection with the hawk that began with the wing feather being dropped above the down from above the oak tree on the farm was a gift of flight on the wings of a red-tailed hawk. The powers in all of this are far beyond anything we've discussed so far.
This is wonderful, wonderful visions, and wonderful teaching visions, too. And just quite extraordinary. There's one after the other in this book. They're just marvelous. And as you say, the things you learn from that flight, tell it, Whitley has had similar experiences. I wish I were more attuned to that sort of thing, but tell me some of the things you think you learned from that flight.
Well, that was a flight that brought me to a particular teacher who had called to me, and this is a Mohawk Iroquois, a woman of power, a Rondiwana, a Dzedzot. The Dzedzot means in the Mohawk language dreamer, shaman, healer, and doctor. A real healer or doctor or shaman must be a dreamer first and last. And her message is for her time, is for our time, as well as her own. It is basically this. We must get in touch with soul, and we must live from soul, otherwise our own lives are going to be withered, and our world is going to collapse. It's an urgent call for our times to connect with a deeper reality, to remember the purposes of the soul, and to honor the soul on an everyday basis. So this was an awakening for me. I mean, I'd found it inconvenient at various stages in my life to contemplate a life of teaching soul, work to do with soul. It didn't seem to be any money in it, certainly. It seemed to be hard. It seemed to separate me from previous definitions of success and previous friends. But my encounter with Island Woman and the Iroquois dreaming people in upstate New York brought me to a realization that there are things far more important than the calculations of what the poet Yeats calls the daily trivial mind. Mm-hmm. It brought me to a recollection of the knowledge that I believe belongs to all of us if we'll just wake up and remember and reclaim it.
Well, Robert, on that wonderful, beautiful sentence, I think we'll leave you now. And I urge everyone to read this book because it is a magical book, and I'm sure you can tell that from listening to Robert. And Robert, thank you so much for being with us. I've enjoyed every minute of this week's Mysterious Powers.
My pleasure, Anne. Let me give you a dreamer's wish. May your best dreams come true, and may you remember them and live them.
Oh, I certainly hope so. From now on, at least I'm going to try.
Okay, wonderful.
This is Anne Streber from Mysterious Powers Radio. I've enjoyed it so much, and I'll be talking to you again in 2 weeks.